Yeah, my research seems to have long titles. But that's because Rhode Island has a long title for this particular provision. And essentially, just before beginning, I'd like to acknowledge other members of the research team, fellow scholars from Brown University, and like to note that there are no disclosures to report. So just a little background on Medicaid, if you are unfamiliar. It's a jointly funded federal-state program administered by the states. The federal government pays 50 to 83% of expenditures, and states administer it within broad federal parameters. Now, Medicaid is particularly important for long-term care. About one-third of Medicaid spending is on long-term care. And in terms of home and community-based spending, you've seen a steady growth over time, in the number of participants, Medicaid home and community-based services participants, HCBS participants. You're also seeing significant growth in spending as well over time. But despite this, what you see is that, and this is sort of over time looking at spending on long-term care for elders and people with disabilities distributed between institutions and non-institutions, and you see a growth in non-institutional spending, but still institutional spending predominates. So despite all our effort, just 36% of long-term care spending goes towards home and community-based services, the remaining two-thirds towards institutions. And we also see continuing considerable variation across states. So some states have made a lot of progress rebalancing. Examples include New Mexico, Washington, and Minnesota. Other states have not made a lot of progress in this area, despite really a lot of effort in this regard. And one example is Rhode Island, which kind of is bringing up the rear there, which continues to spend about 90% of its Medicaid long-term care funds on institutions and just 10% on home and community-based services. And what we also see, even states that have home and community-based programs for Medicaid, waiver programs, there's large wait lists. So in 2011, which is the latest data, there are over 500,000 people on wait lists for home and community-based spending programs. And you might ask, well, you know, what are waivers? Well, states traditionally operate their Medicaid programs under what is called the state plan. However, they can also receive variances from traditional Medicaid program requirements in relation to providing programs services statewide to all populations. So they can limit the geographic areas, they can limit the populations that are served, but they could also use these provisions to sort of expand home and community-based services. That's 1915C waivers. There were managed care waivers, and there are sort of these broad research and demonstration waivers. And so prior to the global waiver in Rhode Island, it operated its Medicaid program under the state plan and multiple waiver authorities. In fact, in addition, you know, like 9 1915C waivers. Now, Rhode Island, like a lot of states throughout the country, spends a lot on Medicaid. Approximately 25% of its budget goes towards Medicaid in 2006, which is right before the waiver began. Constitutes about $800 million in general revenue. And at the time, they were projecting a budget deficit in excess of $350 million. And so Medicaid growth continued to outpace growth in general funds at this time. And also at this time, as you, according to the later, to the data at that period, 89% of Medicaid long-term care spending went towards nursing homes and just 11% towards home and community-based services. So the state had really, since 2000, had gotten federal grants, planning grants, had passed provisions in state law to make progress on rebalancing, but it continued to sort of be stymied for various reasons. So one of the major goals of the global waiver, the Global Consumer Choice Compact Medicaid waiver, was to rebalance the publicly funded long-term care system to increase access to home and community-based services and supports and to decrease reliance on institutional stays. Now, there were a number of other major goals, but this was actually the overriding objective. And so what did the waiver give the state? Well, on the one hand, in exchange for the ability to make certain program changes, the state agreed to limit total Medicaid spending over 5 years to $12.1 billion. There was actually, and there was no way the state could spend that amount of money, even if it tried. So this cap wasn't really realistic. And so, in point of fact, going forward, they're reapplying for a new waiver. They're not going to call it a global waiver for various reasons, having to do with misperceptions about whether this is a block grant or not, which it is not. It's really what is cap federal match. The federal state had to spend a dollar. The federal government would match that up to a certain cap, but since there was no way the state could reach that cap, it was, in point of fact, more like a traditional Medicaid program. Now, most importantly, in relation to the rebalancing provisions, there are a variety of provisions to promote the appropriate utilization of institutional services and to facilitate access to non-institutional care. There was adoption of a new level of care assessment instrument. There was education of discharge planners so that they were actually aware of the home and community-based services within the community. There was the implementation of nursing home diversion and transportation programs. They developed a preventative level of care, hopefully identify people who might be on the trajectory towards nursing home placement and maybe prevent that from happening. Sought to expand shared living for elders and adults with disabilities, home health, assisted living, adult day services, and really also to improve the coordination of publicly funded long-term care. So in this respect, they developed what was the so-called Assessment and Coordination Organization, which included all the agencies within the Executive Office of Health and Human Services, which might touch on long-term care. And they sought to focus on high utilizers, people who cost a lot of money, who are likely to end up in nursing homes, but who they might be able to divert. So there is some evidence that some progress has been made in rebalancing. Studied by some colleagues at Brown, identified a reduction in nursing home admissions staying long term, and those who were staying were actually tended to be higher acuity, sicker. So, and there was a reduction in those who could be identified as low care. So. And these findings were kind of reinforced by a Lewin Group report that the state contracted, which saw a slight reduction in monthly nursing home users, a very modest increase in nursing home spending, just 0.8%, and a slight increase in the cost of per resident per day. But at the same time, a nearly 10% increase in monthly home and community-based services users and a real almost 50% increase in annual home and community-based spending. So there's some progress being made. However, if you look at the overall numbers, and this is really comparing right when the waivers started to around state fiscal year 2010 to 2012, the distribution of spending between home and community-based services and waiver services has not changed all that much. So, what were factors facilitating or impeding the design and implementation of the waiver that might help explain these findings? Sort of undertook a number of interviews, reviewed lots of documents, and so there are three basic lessons. One is rebalancing occurs slowly in states where nursing home care currently predominates, Rhode Island being an example of that. Let me see. It remains an optional benefit under Medicaid. Nursing home care is mandatory. Home and community-based services is optional. Even if you want to expand these services, you can restrict the number of participants. And also, importantly, nursing homes, when states pay for nursing home care, they're paying for both room and board as well as the services. With HCBS, they can only pay for the service part. And so what do you do with the room and board? It's kind of an impediment to rebalancing. The Affordable Care Act has a number of provisions expanding the options and incentives available for rebalancing, and there's some other sort of less, sort of more minor provisions in this regard. Likelihood is that these will have minimal effect because you can provide additional options and additional incentives, but the fact is nursing home care is still mandatory, HCBS is still optional, and particularly during when the economy is slow and the budget deficit becomes an overriding concern, where do you go? You go to the part of the budget that is optional to restrict service growth. Why am I having trouble with this? Let's see.
You want to go forward?
Here it goes. All right. So under adverse fiscal circumstances is a significant impediment to rebalancing. The state budget process, so you saw in the latest downturn where the states cut, they cut back on their optional state-only paid programs, but they also continued to expand Medicaid HCBS, but at a much slower rate while instituting cost controls, enrollment caps, and coverage limits. And if you look at really state political processes, nursing homes are among the most powerful lobbying groups at the state level. HCBS is relatively weak. Also, the way that growth in spending or payments for services over time takes place, nursing homes, it tends to be automatic, sort of some indice, national or local indice, whereas HCBS is more of a legislative adjustment that needs to be negotiated more. And as well as nursing home payments tend to be supported by provider taxes, whereas home and community-based spending is not. Provider taxes just enable states to tax the providers, use that money to pay providers, draw additional federal money without having to spend their own dollars. So it's a way of supporting reimbursement. It's used in nursing homes, not in HCBS. And finally, it's really subject to short-term thinking in HCBS. I mean, the overriding goal, of course, is to provide people with services that they prefer within a home and community-based settings rather than in a nursing home. On the other hand, the overriding goal among state policymakers is that they also see that this can save money. Clearly on a per-unit basis, it's cheaper to provide somebody services within the community than in a nursing home. But in order to get to that point, you need to learn to target adequately. Often what you see is that when these programs are implemented, in the short term, costs actually increase, and so there's often discouragement, which serves as impediment to further rebalancing. During economic downturns, in particular, states are reluctant to make these short term investments necessary to make progress on rebalancing. And Rhode Island was exemplary in this regard. It didn't implement a planned increase in monthly payment allowances. So remember, like, people are moving from a nursing home to home. They've sort of sold their houses. They don't have an apartment anymore. They sold their pots and pans. How are you going to set them up at home when they don't have these resources? So, and also, they enacted substantial reductions in state personnel at the same time, both for ideological reasons. We had a Republican governor, but also because the state budget crisis, and it delayed payment increases meant to spur provider entry, which was problematic as well. And finally, it's important to document and promote provider capacity necessary to meet the desired or expected expectations. You have to think prospectively about home and community-based services. There's a lack of capacity in Rhode Island to serve the growing numbers of folks who would be eligible for HCBS. But they did not sort of do a resource mapping exercise until after they began their transition programs and diversion programs. And so it really makes more sense to do that beforehand, so you have a good lay of the land and know where you need to grow. And so you need to think more broadly about HCBS. What are the basic services? In addition to basic services and supports, it's the underlying infrastructure, transportation, and housing, and connecting consumers to what they need. So in conclusion, HCBS is still an optional benefit. Nursing home is mandatory. There will remain, as long as this is the case, there will remain substantial variation across states. It will be especially vulnerable to state political and budget processes. And for states wishing to make progress, think prospectively, do your resource mapping beforehand, increase payments, attract additional providers, and maintain the necessary administrative infrastructure necessary to develop and implement the key provisions. So, thank you.
Any questions?
Sure. Any questions? Sure. So one area where they actually grew somewhat was called shared living, which was previously used for the developmentally disabled, intellectually disabled communities. And it's basically having somebody, it could be a family member, could be a neighbor, a friend, where basically somebody moves in, the elderly disabled frail person would move in. They would kind of provide services, provide the necessary transportation, the housing. There is a coordinating organization that would sort of provide the necessary support for this individual, but also, you know, assisted living, adult day. I think Rhode Island is now recognizing that what also needs to happen is greater integration between the medical and the health and social service systems. So there's a movement towards enrolling folks in these integrated programs in managed care, entirely voluntary, because Medicare, freedom of choice, people have to have choice with the, on the Medicare side, and the state decided they did not want to force people into managed care for the Medicaid side. But I think that's where the state's moving towards now. Sorry, one more.
You mentioned that the nursing facility is mandatory. Can you just elaborate on what you mean by that?
So, you know, when Medicaid was passed, whatever, 45 years ago, basically, certain services are mandatory and certain services are optional that states can choose to select if they wanted. Nursing home care is one of the mandatory services that all states must provide under. Now, they have flexibility over provider payments, eligibility, but they have to provide that as a benefit. Home and community-based services, there are three types. Personal care, which is optional. That's always been there, but maybe 30, 33 states have chosen that option, and it's relatively small. There's a home health, which is relatively small because Medicare takes care of most of that, and that's mandatory, but like I said, Medicare pays for that, and it's really short-term. But where there has been growth has been in these waiver programs, home community-based waiver programs, but and there's been tremendous growth in waiver programs, but like unlike sort of typical optional benefits, states can limit the number of people who enroll in these programs. They can limit the scope of services. They can limit the geographic area served. And so that's one way, that's why there's long wait lists and as such. So that's what I'm talking about.
Thank you.